I realize you can't cover the whole agenda of the New World Order, but could you touch briefly on the proposed biological warfare they intend to unleash on us?
Well, I really believe they've already unleashed it. I believe that the HIV virus, I believe the Gulf War Syndrome is a form of biological warfare. And we have a wonderful new interview we did with Dr. Garth Nicholson. And for those of you who don't know who Garth Nicholson is, he was a professor of biology at the MB Anderson Cancer Clinic in Texas. He actually held three professorships at three universities, 430 peer review articles on the board of 10 scientific organizations, and on the editorial staff of two scientific magazines. So he's certainly no clout. He got interested in the Gulf War Syndrome when his stepdaughter came home ill, and his wife got sick, he got sick, their dog got sick. And so he analyzed the organism, which they found in about half of the ill Gulf War veterans, and it is a Mycoplasma incognitus with a GP120 on it. Now, this is a glycoprotein, a special glycoprotein that allows the mycoplasm to anchor onto a cell. No ordinary mycoplasm has a GP120, but there's a virus does. It's the HIV virus. It's exactly the same glycoprotein you find on the HIV virus. So I believe that they have unleashed a very serious illness. According to Dr. Nicholson, he's in touch with people over in Iran, in Kuwait. About 20% of their population is now ill with this. And, you know, it's a very slow disease. It gives you a chronic fatigue torsive syndrome. About 7,000, between 7 and 10,000 of the Gulf War veterans who came back from the Gulf War are now dead from this illness. This is a terrible, terrible thing. But if they had a disease like Ebola, which is probably genetically engineered, you can stop it because you immediately isolate it. But with HIV and with Gulf War, we don't know that people are infected until they're terribly ill and they've infected many others. That's the beauty of this.
I was referring to the speaker that introduced you as talking about it being smuggled into the country, airborne, aerosol, and so on, that they're going to unleash on us.
You're talking about Mr. Harris. I have talked to Mr. Harris. I've interviewed Mr. Harris. I am not very taken with what he has to say. He supposedly has all these degrees. Let me just put it this way. I don't have a lot of confidence in him.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Monteith, we have heard here at the Granada Forum a presentation last year by, I believe the man's name is Brian Ellis,
right,
an associate of Dr. Peter Duisberg, who I believe holds the title of a professor of molecular biochemistry at UC Berkeley, who, as most of the people here in this room know, those two gentlemen have argued that there is no AIDS epidemic. There is no HIV epidemic of a lethal nature, but that rather that what is defined as AIDS by the Center for Disease Control and the World Health Organization is basically a wide range of deadly illnesses endemic in the third world as a result of malnutrition and lack of sanitation, and in the Western world, largely among the intravenous drug using and homosexual population as a result of those specific problems of their sexual practices and their intense and widespread drug use. What is your opinion of their thesis and their work?
Well, since I asked you to ask the question, I'm so glad you did. I believe, my personal opinion is Mr. Professor Duisberg is one of the most dangerous men in America today. I've debated Dr. Duisberg. He will not go onto a podium with me. They keep saying nobody will debate us, but every time I ask Brian to come onto a program, he's always suddenly incurably ill for the time being. Let me tell you what's wrong with what they say. First of all, they are absolutely right. If you'd come in, I don't know, were you here at the very beginning when I said there is no AIDS epidemic, and they use that term simply to confuse us. Some of the cases in Africa are related to immunodeficiency. Pardon me, some of them are related to these other conditions you talk about, but here in America we have a pretty good appraisal of what this disease is. And there is almost no immunodeficiency within the general population other than related to HIV disease. So if you take, and there are several studies, there's Dr. Asher's study that was done in San Francisco and a parallel study that was done in Canada, where they took large numbers of homosexuals. One of these was 1,000 people, about 300 heterosexuals, 300 HIV positive homosexuals, 300 HIV negative homosexuals. They followed them for 8 years. Only those that were HIV positive progressed to terminal stage immunodeficiency, except for those HIV negative homosexuals who converted to HIV positive and progressed. So basically, and they were paired as far as drug use, they were paired as far as promiscuity, they were paired as far as the use of poppers and all of these other things that Peter Duesberg refers to. And so Peter Duesberg, if you read his book, he'll say, if they'd only do this study, but why won't they do the study? They've done the study, but he knows that the general population doesn't know about it. Now, Dr. Duesberg makes the point that AIDS is a bad term, and he's absolutely right. But because we continue to use the term AIDS, we give him the ability to come up with his saying there is no AIDS epidemic. He's right, it's an HIV epidemic. Now, let me take a few of the points that he makes. Number one, you cannot find the virus in the human body. I mean, it's almost impossible to find. Well, if you go to your doctor right now, he will tell you, if he knows anything about AIDS, he will tell you that we measure the progression of the disease by the virus in the blood. And they do a PCR on the blood, and if you if you get your count down to about 1,800, that's really great. When you are in the terminal stage disease, you will have a million viral particles per cubic millimeter in the blood. Now, he knows that, but he knows that the average individual doesn't know that. He tells you that the HIV virus is harmless. In fact, Brian Ellison has pointed out, why, how can you say the HIV virus kills anything? They grow it in the laboratory in white cells, and yet they're telling you it kills the white cells. And he's absolutely right. They do grow it in the laboratory in white cells. What he doesn't tell you is that they have to use special types of white cells. They have to use special types of white cells that are infected with a cancer virus so that they won't be killed. Either that or they just have to keep feeding more and more white cells in. If you read Randy Schilt's book, And the Band Played On, you can verify this. Or, of course, I went to Don Francis, who was with the CDC, and I went to the head of the CDC virology lab because I'm an orthopedist. I had to know. This virus kills white cells in the laboratory. It kills so many of them, they have to just constantly be feeding because the virus kills. But Duesberg, who's an extremely intelligent individual, makes a statement that is frankly not true. If you read his book, he will tell you about Kimberly Bergalis, the girl in Florida who was infected by Dr. Aker. And Dr. Duesberg will tell you that she was in good health. She had a little case of pneumonia, and she was in the hospital, and for some unknown reason, they did a HIV count on her, and they found that she was HIV positive. They started her on AZT, and she died. In fact, almost everybody who takes AZT dies. Well, let me tell you the truth about Kimberly, because I have her medical records I got from her dad. She went to the hospital and she had pneumocystis carinii pneumonia, which you get only when you have severe immunodeficiency. They did a CD4 count on it, it was 41 instead of 1,000. And then they started her on AZT and she couldn't keep it on it for any period of time, and she was off of it and really relatively soon. What you have to understand, he makes the point, AZT is what produces the problem. AZT is what's killing people. What about all the people who don't take AZT and have immunodeficiency and progress to death? Before they ever had AZT, people were going ahead and getting progressive immunodeficiency and progressing to death. AZT is not a good drug, but it was the only drug they had. And right now, of course, there's an organized effort to discourage homosexuals from taking AZT. But when your count gets low enough, they put you on it. If your CD4 count goes up, they keep you on it. If your CD4 count goes down, they just take you off of it. Right now, we have excellent treatments with the triple cocktail made up of protease inhibitors, DDI, and AZT. And we're actually bringing these people back. They were at death's door. I mean, they'd already sold their life insurance. They were ready to die. And suddenly, why, it's just like coming back to life again. But there is an organized effort, and if you read the homosexual magazines as I do, they're telling them, don't take this drug. This is going to kill you. If you don't take it, you're going to die. You've got a lethal disease. You go step by step, as I have through Dr. Duesberg's book, mixing truth with falsehood. He puts together one of the most convincing arguments that there is no epidemic out there. And what do you do with the 350,000 people who are dead? Well, they died because they took poppers. Well, if you look at what happens when you take poppers, people were taking poppers for many years before there was AZT out there, and they did not develop immunodeficiency. If you look at the AZT studies, where they take one group and they give AZT, and another group where they don't give AZT. And, of course, these were double-blind studies. And, of course, they were done to show that AZT prolonged life. And in the early studies, this was the Concord study done in England, it really didn't work. It really didn't prolong life at all. In fact, it was probably counterproductive as far as the individual was concerned. But if you look at that study, there was no increase in death despite the fact they were giving the people AZT. It didn't help, but it didn't do any harm. For the people who can take it, it was the best thing we had to give people who had a lethal illness and were going to die anyway, and we prolonged the life of some of them to the point now where we do have treatments that are quite effective, at least here in the United States. And for those of you who would like a more detailed analysis of this, IV drug users, he points out that IV drug users, the use of IV drugs drives the white count down. It actually doesn't. The scientific study shows it actually went up somewhat in IV drug users. And we have a pamphlet we put together called The Lethal Deception. I have my own HIV Watch newsletter, which we probably have there in the back, and we'll be glad to give you free copies of that, called The Grand Deception. But what Dr. Duesberg and Brian Ellison did was target the Christian community across America, whether it was the New American Magazine or Spotlight or Christian Coalition or Media Bypass Magazine or Christian Conservative, and they managed to create organized confusion. A great deal of money went into this. Dr. Duesberg says, look, I've been discriminated against. They won't give me any money for research. And Brian Ellison says, my book, Why We'll Never Win the War on AIDS, has been suppressed. I was sued because they wanted to silence it. They didn't silence the book. They republished it under a new name called Inventing the AIDS Virus. It's exactly the same book. Peter Duesberg will tell you that in the foreword, or almost identical book. But because they suppressed the book, Why We'll Never Win the War on AIDS, suddenly Brian Ellison has stature. They're suppressing my book. They're trying to keep you from learning the truth. There really isn't an epidemic. It is one of the most clever scams ever created, and they created those dancing shadows on the wall of the cave, and most people are unconcerned about an epidemic because of all the planned confusion, and I credit that. Many, many, many millions of people will die because of Peter Duesberg and his excellent work in creating planned confusion. Now, what his motivation is, I don't know. I will tell you, though, that he will not debate me, and he will not refute any of the statements I've made because all of my statements are true, and if you want the material we have, we'll be glad to offer you my counter to Peter Duesberg, which incidentally, no one wants to publish or talk about.
Dr. Stan, you don't even have to go to Georgia to see New World Order statuary. You just go down to the Ryball Building, our courthouse, our federal court building, and in the courtyard there, it's at least 150 statue reliefs up on a patio cover. It shows on the left side the women carrying the earth, and then they finally break it open. A new earth is reborn. You have columns being knocked down that are supporting the roof for the Hall of Justice, and either the Bible or the law books being destroyed. On the right-hand side, you see the king in a caravan with a motorcycle caravan, and then he's riding in a car. Then you see him totally dismembered, his head cut off, and in the center of all of this is a witch in a pyramidic-shaped gown, and she has five arms, and she's got the king's head in her hand, and one of five arms in her hand, and she's got the knife in another, and it's unbelievable. And then we have Mother Gaia holding the earth on a fountain in the middle of this courtyard. But go down to the Ryball Building and see it. It's unbelievable.
Ryball's
right down on Temple Street, right near Los Angeles, and I don't know how our government got the money to put this up there. Why isn't there things of some good Supreme Court justice or maybe Abraham Lincoln or something like that, but the New World Order doesn't belong there.
They worship a different God. And of course, if you don't believe these things, look on the back of your dollar bill. You'll see the triangle, the pyramid with the all-seeing eye on the top of it. Now, that basically is an occult symbol. It was put there, actually, on the back of the Great Seal of the United States at the time America was created. And if you haven't read the books by Manly Hall, America's leading occultist, America's Secret Destiny, and The Secret History of America, and he's right down here, at least the Philosophical Research Foundation is down here, and he will tell you that the occultists were here at the time America was created. But Henry Wallace, who was a Luciferian, who was the Secretary of Agriculture and eventually the Vice President of the United States under FDR, was deeply involved with theosophy, and he talked FDR into putting that symbol under the back of the dollar bill. It wasn't there until about the late 1930s. But of course, you carry in your pocket, every one of you, this Luciferian symbol that goes back 6,000 years. That is the eye not of God, but of Lucifer. And of course, this gentleman is pointing out it's everywhere. We were down at Disneyland, and they have a new ride there. It's Indiana Jones and the Last Frontier or something of the sort. And as I'm sitting, I'm not very good on roller coasters. I sent my wife to check it out. But I'm sitting there, and they have this old lorry there, and it says Archaeological Exposition. And over the top of that, there's the triangle with the all-seeing eye in it, sitting there, you know, right there at Disneyland. A tremendous occultic overtones in that. Every time you turn your television on, and the CBS symbol, the all-seeing eye, that's an old, age-old occultic symbol, comes right out of the Illuminati. And you're right, sir, it's everywhere, and what we need to do is teach people to look, and suddenly when you see it, it's so obvious. But we have to teach people to see and get them away from the dancing shadows and open their eyes. Thank you for mentioning that, sir.
Dr. Stan, okay, get here. Do you feel that human genetic engineering was in any way responsible for either the creation of the HIV virus or of its alteration to make it more virulent?
Yes. I believe Len Horowitz has done a tremendous job. I commend his book to you. I was extremely reluctant to believe this, and I really fought it for a long period of time, but Len convinced me that this is genetically engineered. And I'll tell you one thing that convinced me, and that is that we don't have one epidemic. We have about six of them. We have an HIV-1, we have an HIV-2, and under HIV-1, we have subtype B, which is in America, and A and D, which are in Africa, and C and E, which are in Asia and various sundry places. These are all different epidemics. The type of virus we have in America is entirely different than the one that they have in Africa and Asia. The one we have in America is very hard to spread heterosexually among whites and very easy to spread heterosexually among blacks. That didn't happen by accident. And of course, it's very easy to spread among IV drug users and among homosexuals. And the one in Africa is very easy to spread heterosexually. And these are scientific studies that have been done to demonstrate this, a lot of them done by Professor Max Essex back at the Harvard AIDS Institute. So, you know, I believe that this is a diabolical situation. And when you stop and read, and if you'd like copies of this article out of Special Warfare or the speech by Professor Hazeltine, we will have that available through our ministry. But when they're talking about a billion or billions of people dying, you'd think that somebody on the media somewhere would mention this. But of course, these are things you're not supposed to know about.
I once understood you to say that you didn't think that Rothschild was very important, or the Bank of England, or the other multinational bankers, with the exception of Rockefeller.
I believe that they're all important, but the people want to just say it's Rothschilds and Rothschild alone. No, I believe that all of the international bankers are, but most of the international bankers are not Jewish. If you read Tragedy and Hope, if you read pages 324 and 325, Professor Quigley points out how the central banks are really working with this idea of taking over the world. But if you read the thing very carefully, Rothschild is part of it, but the names of many of the other bankers are not Jewish. And if you, for instance, go into Lazard Brothers Bank in England, one of the great international merchant banks, but the man who headed it was actually a member of the the Round Table, and he was not Jewish at all. Lehman Brothers here in the United States for many years was headed by Pete Peters, director of the CFR, but not Jewish. And yet we look at Lehman Brothers, and we look at Lazard, and we look at Rothschild, and there is an effort to make us believe this is a Jewish conspiracy, which it's not.
What do you think of LaRouche and the New Federalist as a source?
I think LaRouche is one of the most dangerous men in America today, going right along with... But I will tell you, he puts out a lot of fascinating material. I mean, I suggest that you get his material and you read it and you research it, but I would ask you one question, and that is, where is Lyndon LaRouche getting all of his money to be able to do what he does and have the research team that he has? And I have very, very strong ideas. In fact, from the American government. In other words, do you understand the philosophy of the dialectics? The thesis, the antithesis, the struggle, and then the new thesis? Basically, the government is financing the right, they're financing the left, and we get behind Lyndon LaRouche on one side, we get behind the communists, we get behind the conservatives, the Republicans or Democrats, the right and left, but it's all to keep idle minds busy so that we can't break loose from the dancing shadows and begin to see the whole spiritual nature of the battle. But at least according to the communists, he gets his money from the American government. I rather think he probably is a subsidiary of the establishment. And now he's been given credence because they put him in jail for a short period of time, but you notice he's out in very short order, right back to doing what he was doing, exactly as the same as Sun Moon. Where does Moon get the money to finance the Washington Times? You realize he spent hundreds of millions of dollars into the Washington Times, which is the most conservative newspaper in America. Where is that money coming from? Yes, sir.
Hi, I'd like you to elaborate on three different items. Talk a little bit more about the vaccines that we're giving our children, your sense of that in the last 10 years, and if there's any danger there. And the other two items are fluoride and NutraSweet.
Well, first of all, I would not discourage you from giving your child diphtheria and tetanus, because I think they've been a great boon. The pertussis, I think that the new pertussis is all right. I can't really say that because it's only been on the market a short period of time. But the old pertussis had some real problems with it. The polio vaccine, I don't know. There's a professor down at UCLA named Professor Martin, and he incidentally endorses Len Horowitz's book. And I've talked to him, and there's a foamy virus that was, you see, you have to understand, the poliovirus was grown in a culture of the kidney of the green monkey. Before that was grown in a culture of the kidney of the rhesus monkey until they found out that there was an SV40, a simian virus 40, that produces cancer in hamsters. So then they brought in the green monkey, and that had the simian immunodeficiency virus in it. But I really don't know what to advise you with the polio vaccine, but I will tell you that the diphtheria and the tetanus vaccines are very good. I am not an expert on the measles, mumps, and those at the present time. If they come up with a genetically engineered virus, I think that these are great. The hepatitis B vaccine is an excellent vaccine. The trouble is they're giving it to every child, and every child is not going to get hepatitis B. I mean, you get this by sexual promiscuity, by IV drug use, and I think that they're selling this to a lot of, you know, they're just saying everybody should take it, and I don't think you should. I think maybe doctors should take it and nurses should take it, but I don't think that everybody needs to take all these vaccines. I think if they come up with a genetically engineered AIDS virus, I think that this would be one of the greatest boons of all time, but they're not going to do it. They're actively blocking that. Now, you ask about fluoride, and I am very concerned about fluoride. I will tell you because, as an orthopedic surgeon, we know that fluoridated water increases hip fractures. There are things that suggest that it may be carcinogenic. Certainly, it may very well give you hard teeth, but you may die from a hip fracture with the hardest teeth in the world. I think it is criminal negligence. I do not believe that should be done. I believe that it is part of population control. And you ask about the aspartame. I have some serious misgivings. I will not take anything with NutraSweet in it. I know that there are some very responsible people who've done research on this and believe that it does produce neurological changes. And this was sold to the American public by a fraudulent scientific study that found out that if you gave mice who are prone to cancer, 6,000 times the amount of saccharin that you would give to comparable to human beings, that they got cancer of the bladder or something, and therefore they outlawed saccharin for a period of time, so they get the NutraSweet in. I have a very uneasy feeling about it, so I would avoid this. Sometimes you get so paranoid, you never know what you can believe and what you can't believe. I would have to do more research on it, but right now, I don't drink any of the Diet Cokes. As you can tell looking at me, it's... yes, sir?
Yes, you talked about this population control problem that they have decided to thin us out a little bit, or a lot. You've been thinking about it long enough now. Have you thought about that it is a real problem, of course, that we are overpopulating the planet? Can you see any way for us socially acceptable, religiously right, or whatever you want to call it, humane, for a way for us to cap off our population and perhaps over a long period of maybe several hundreds of years slowly decline in population? Do you yourself, have you thought of anything along those lines?
Well, I've thought about it, but I believe that between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. And I believe that when men try to play God, they end up with a Holocaust, they end up with what we're doing today with an AIDS epidemic that is being allowed to spread. I believe God has a plan for this, and I think when we start to get in with our own intelligence and try to solve some of these problems, we are going to create tremendous, tremendous problems.
That's the last question. Oh, we have one more.
Thank you. So I'd like to know, in your investigations, could you elaborate on if you have seen a coming together of the militia groups throughout the country, or are they more further apart because of the different hysterical that's going on, or what do you see?
I believe that most of the militia groups that you see are government financed. I never forget a few years ago, I guess about a year ago, when the fellow who was, I think the militia Montana or something of the sort, it was exposed he was an FBI agent, and his excuse was, well, gee, I couldn't have afforded to coordinate all the militias if I wasn't getting the money from the FBI. I believe the government is financing most of this. I believe they're creating a force out there that they can then hit out and say, there's the real enemy. It's those radical right Christian fundamentalist militia members. And the tragedy is that we're all being manipulated, and it's so difficult to know what to do in this time. I myself believe that this is a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political battlefield, and we're going to have to face it spiritually. We're going to have to face it politically too, but we're not going to do it by electing the Republicans, although I will happen to be have a high position, or I used to have it, in the state Republican Party. But you know what we need to do is get God-fearing people into government, and we need to educate the public as to what's going on. I'm very, very fearful that the militia movement, and much of the conservative and much of the liberal movement is all being financed by the enemies of freedom. Thank you so very much. It's been a real pleasure to be with you.